like a mystery that I had to solve. What in the world happened to the blind old man who played the accordion on Main Street? Nobody seemed to know. My mom and I asked the cashiers in the supermarket, the lady in the dry cleaners, and the man in the eye shop across the street if they knew anything about him. We even asked the policeman who gave out parking tickets on that block. Everyone knew who he was, but no one knew what had happened to him, just that one day, poof, he wasn't there anymore. The policeman told me that on really cold days, homeless people are actually taken to the city shelters so they won't freeze to death. He thought that's probably what happened to the accordion man. But the dry cleaning lady said that she knew for a fact that the accordion man wasn't homeless. She thought he lived somewhere up in Riverdale because she'd see him getting off the BX3 bus early in the mornings with his dog. And the eye shop man said that he was certain that the accordion man had been a famous jazz musician once and was actually loaded, so I shouldn't worry about him. You would think these answers would have helped me, right? But they didn't. They just raised a whole bunch of other questions that made me even more curious about him. Like, was he in a homeless shelter for the winter? Was he living in his own beautiful house in Riverdale? Had he really been a famous jazz musician? Was he rich? If he was rich, why was he playing for money? My whole family got sick and tired of my talking about this, by the way. Beatrix was like, "Charlotte, if you talk about this one more time, I'm going to throw up all over you." And Amy said, "Charlotte, will you just drop it already?" My mom's the one who suggested that a good way to channel my energy would be to start a coat drive in our neighborhood to benefit homeless people. We put up flyers asking people to donate their gently worn coats by dropping them off in plastic bags in a giant bin we left in front of our brownstone. Then, after we'd collected about 10 huge garbage bags full of coats, my mom and dad and I drove all the way downtown to the Bowery Mission to donate the coats. I have to say, it felt really good to give all those coats to people who really needed them. I looked around when I was inside the mission with my parents to see if maybe the accordion man was there, but he wasn't. Anyway, I knew he had a nice coat already, a bright orange Canada Goose parka that made my mom hopeful that the rumors about his being rich might actually be true. "You don't see many homeless people wearing Canada Goose," observed Mom. When I got back to school after winter break, Mr. Tushman, the middle school director, congratulated me on having started a coat drive. I'm not sure how he knew, but he knew. It was generally agreed upon that Mr. Tushman had some kind of secret surveillance drone keeping tabs on everything going on at Beecher Prep. There was no other way he could know all the stuff he seemed to know. "That's a beautiful way to spend your winter vacation, Charlotte," he said. "Aw, thank you, Mr. Tushman." I loved Mr. Tushman. He was always really nice. What I liked was that he was one of those teachers that never talks to you like you're some little kid. He always uses big words, assuming you know and understand them, and he never looks away when you're talking to him. I also loved that he wore suspenders and a bow tie and bright red sneakers. "Do you think you could help me organize a coat drive here at Beecher Prep?" he asked. "Now that you're an expert at it, I would love your input." "Sure," I answered, which is how I ended up being part of the first annual Beecher Prep coat drive. In any case, between the coat drive and all the other drama going on at school when I got back from winter vacation, more on that soon, I didn't really get a chance to solve the mystery of what happened to the blind old man who played the accordion on Main Street. Ellie didn't seem the least bit interested in helping me solve the mystery, though it was the kind of thing that she might have been into just a few months before. And neither Maya nor Lena seemed to remember him at all. In fact, no one seemed to care about what happened to him in the least. So finally, I just dropped the subject. I still thought about the accordion man sometimes, though. Every once in a while, one of the songs he used to play on his accordion would come back to me, and then I'd hum it all day long. How the Boy War Started. The only thing everybody could talk about when we got back from winter break was the war, also referred to as the boy war. The whole thing started right before winter break. A few days before recess, Jack Will had gotten suspended for punching Julian Albans in the mouth. Talk about drama. Everyone was gossiping about it. But no one knew exactly why Jack did it. Most people thought it had something to do with Augie Pullman. To explain that a bit, you have to know that Augie Pullman is this kid at our school who was born with very severe facial issues. And by severe, I mean severe. Like, really severe. None of his features are where they're supposed to be. And it's kind of shocking when you see him at first, because it's like he's wearing a mask or something. So when he started at Beecher Prep, everybody noticed him. He was impossible not to notice. A few people, like Jack and Summer and me, were nice to him from the beginning. Like when I would pass him in the hall, I'd always say, "Hey, Augie, how you doing?" and stuff like that. Now, sure, part of that was because Mr. Tushman had asked me to be a welcome buddy to Augie before school had started, but I would have been nice to him even if he hadn't asked me to do that. Most people, though, like Julian and his group, were not at all nice to Augie, especially in the beginning. I don't think people were even trying to be mean, necessarily. I think they were just a little weirded out by his face, is all. They said stupid things behind his back, called him freak, played this game called The Plague, which I did not participate in, by the way. If I've never touched Augie Pullman, it's only because I've never had a reason to. That's all. Nobody ever wanted to hang out with him or get partnered up with him on a class project, at least in the beginning of the year. But after a couple of months, people did start getting used to him. Not that they were really nice or anything, but at least they stopped being mean. Everyone, that is, except for Julian, who continued to make such a big deal about him. It's like he couldn't get over the fact that Augie looks the way he looks. As if the poor guy could help it, right? Anyway, so what everyone thinks happened is that Julian said something horrible about Augie to Jack, and Jack, being a good friend, punched Julian. Boom! And then Jack got suspended. Boom! And now he's back from suspension. Boom! And that's the drama. But that's not all there is to it. Because then what happened is this. Over winter break, Julian had this huge party and, basically, turned everyone in the fifth grade against Jack. He spread this rumor that the school psychologist had told his mom that Jack was emotionally unstable, and that the pressure of being friends with Augie had made him snap and turn into an angry maniac. Crazy stuff! Of course, none of it was true, and most people knew that. But it didn't stop Julian from spreading that lie. And now the boys are all in this war. And that's how it started. And it's so stupid. How I stayed neutral. I know one thing people say about me is that I'm a goody-two-shoes. I have no idea why they say that. Because I'm really not that much of a goody-two-shoes. But I'm also not someone who's going to be mean to someone just because someone else says I should be mean to them. I hate when people do stuff like that. So when all the boys started giving Jack the cold shoulder, and Jack didn't know why, I thought the least I could do was tell him what was going on. I mean, I've known Jack since we were in kindergarten. He's a good kid. The thing is, I didn't want anyone to see me talking to him. Some of the girls, like Savannah's group, had started taking sides with the Julian boys, and I really wanted to stay neutral because I didn't want any of them to get mad at me. I was still hoping that maybe, one of these days, I'd work my way into that group myself. The last thing I wanted was to do anything to mess up my chances with them. So, one day, right before last period, I slipped Jack a note to meet me in room 301 after school, which he did. And then I told him everything that was going on. You should have seen Jack's face. It was bright red. Seriously. The poor kid. We pretty much agreed that this whole thing was so messed up. I really felt sorry for him. Then, After we were done talking, I sneaked out of the room without anyone seeing me. How I wanted to tell Ellie about my talk with Jack Will. At lunch the next day, I was going to tell Ellie that I talked to Jack. Ellie and I both had had a tiny secret crush on Jack Will, going back to the fourth grade when he played the Artful Dodger in Oliver, and we thought he looked adorable in a top hat. I went over to her when she was emptying her lunch tray. We don't sit at the same lunch table anymore, ever since she switched to Savannah's lunch table around Halloween. But I still trusted Ellie. We've been BFFs since first grade. That counts for a lot. "Hey," I said, nudging into her with my shoulder. "Hey," she said, nudging me back. "Why weren't you in chorus yesterday?" "Oh, didn't I tell you?" she said. "I switched electives when I came back from winter break. I'm in band now." "Band? Seriously?" I said. "I'm playing the clarinet," she answered. "Wow," I said, nodding. "Sweet." This bit of news was really surprising to me, for a lot of reasons. "Anyhow, what's up with you, Charlie?" she said. "I feel like I've hardly seen you since we got back from winter break." She picked up my wrist to inspect my new bangle. "I know, right?" I answered, though I didn't point out that that was because she had canceled on me every single time we'd made plans to hang out after school. "How's Maya's dot tournament going?" She was referring to Maya's obsession with making the world's largest dot game to play at lunchtime. We kind of made fun of it behind her back. "Good," I answered, smiling. "I keep meaning to ask you about this whole boy war thing. It's so lame, isn't it?" She rolled her eyes. "It's totally out of control." "Right?" I said. "I feel kind of sorry for Jack. Don't you think Julian should just call it quits already?" Ellie started twisting a strand of hair around her finger. She took a fresh juice box off the counter and popped the straw into the hole. "I don't know, Charlie," she answered. "Jack's the one who punched him in the mouth. Julian has every right to be mad." She took a long sip. "I'm actually starting to think that Jack has serious anger management issues." "Hold up. What?" "I've known Ellie since forever, and the Ellie I know would never use a phrase like anger management issues. Not that Ellie isn't smart, but she's not that smart." "Anger management issues?" That sounded more like something Ximena Chin would say in that sarcastic way of hers. Ever since Ellie had started hanging out with Ximena and Savannah, she's been acting weirder and weirder. "Wait a minute. I just remembered something. Ximena plays clarinet. That explains why Ellie switched electives. Now it's all making sense." "Either way," said Ellie, "I don't think we should get involved. It's a boy thing." "Yeah, whatever," I answered, deciding it was better if I didn't tell Ellie I had spoken with Jack. "So, are you ready for the dance tryouts today?" she asked cheerfully. "Yeah," I answered, pretending to get excited. "I think Mrs. Antanabe is..." "Ready, Ellie?" said Ximena Chin, who had just appeared out of nowhere. She nodded a quick hello my way without really looking at me, and then turned around and headed to the lunchroom exit. Ellie dropped her unfinished juice box into the trash can, clumsily heaved her backpack onto her right shoulder, and trotted after Ximena. "See you later, Charlie," she mumbled halfway across the lunchroom. "Later," I answered, watching her catch up to Ximena. Together, they joined Savannah and Gretchen, a sixth grader, who were waiting for them by the exit. The four of them were all about the same height, and they all had super long hair with wavy curls at the ends. Their hair colors were different, though. Savannah's was golden blonde, Ximena's was black, Gretchen's was red, and Ellie's was brown. I actually wondered sometimes if Ellie hadn't gotten into that popular group because of her hair, which was just the right color and length to fit in. My hair is white blonde, and so straight and flat, there's no way it would ever end in a curl without massive doses of hairspray. And it's short, like me. How to Use Venn Diagrams, Part 1. In Ms. Rubin's science class, we learned about Venn diagrams, You draw Venn diagrams to see the relationships between different groups of things. Like, if you want to see the common characteristics between mammals, reptiles, and fish, for instance, you draw a Venn diagram and list all the attributes of each one inside a circle. Where the circles intersect is what they have in common. In the case of mammals, reptiles, and fish, it would be that they all have backbones. Anyway, I love Venn diagrams. They're so useful for explaining so many things. I sometimes draw them to explain friendships. Ellie and me in first grade. In my circle, I would write, short, prefers dogs, favorite animal, horse, blonde hair, Elsa. In Ellie's circle, I would write, tall, prefers cats, favorite animal, koala, brown hair, Anna. In the circle we share together, I would write, dance, flower fairies, favorite ice cream, vanilla, big time rush, friends with Maya. As you can see, Ellie and I had a lot in common. We've been friends since the first day of first grade, when Miss Diamond put us both at the same table. I remember that day very clearly. I kept trying to talk to Ellie, but she was shy and didn't want to talk. Then at snack time, I started ice skating with my fingers on the top of the desk we shared. If you don't know what that is, it's when you make an upside-down peace sign and let your fingers glide over the glossy desk like they were figure skaters. Anyway, Ellie watched me do that for a little while, and then she started ice skating with her fingers, too. Pretty soon, we were both making figure eights all over the desk. After that, we were inseparable. Ellie and me now. In my circle, I would write, favorite ice cream, dulce de leche. No boyfriend. In chorus, no bra. Honor roll, not popular. In Ellie's circle, I would write, favorite ice cream, mocha mint. Has boyfriend. In band, wears bra. Average grades, popular. In the circle we share together, I would write, dance, musicals, lunch table. No, cross that one out. How I continued to stay neutral. Ellie, Savannah, and Jimena were hanging out in front of the lockers outside the performance space when I showed up for the dance tryouts after school. I knew the moment they looked at me that they'd just been talking about me. You're not really taking Jack's side in the boy war, are you? Said Savannah, making an ew expression with her lips. I glanced at Ellie, who had obviously shared some of my lunch conversation with Savannah and Jimena. She chewed a strand of hair and looked away. I'm not on Jack's side, I said calmly. I popped open my locker and shoved my backpack inside. All I said is that I think this whole boy war thing is dumb. All the boys are just being so jerky. Yeah, but Jack started it, said Savannah. Or are you saying it's okay that he punched Julian? No, it's definitely not okay that he did that, I answered, pulling out my dance gear. So how could you be on Jack's side? Savannah asked quickly, still making that ew face with her mouth. Is it because you like him? Asked Jimena, smiling mischievously. Jimena, who probably hasn't said more than 30 words to me all year long, is asking me if I like Jack? No, I answered, but I could feel my ears turning red. I glanced up at Ellie as I sat down to put on my jazz sneakers. She was twirling yet another part of her hair in preparation for putting it into her mouth. I can't believe she told them about Jack. What a traitor! At that moment, Mrs. Antanabe came into the room, clapping to get everyone's attention in her usual theatrical way. Okay, girls, if you haven't signed your name on the tryout sheet, please do so now, she said, pointing to the clipboard on the table next to her. There were about 8 other girls standing in line to sign in. And if you've already signed in, please take a spot on the dance floor and start doing your stretches. I'll sign in for you, Jimena said to Savannah, walking over to the table. Do you want me to sign in for you, Charlie? Ellie asked me. I knew that was her way of checking to see if I was mad at her, which I was. I already signed in, I answered quietly, not looking at her. Of course she signed in, Savannah said quickly, rolling her eyes. Charlotte's always the first to sign in. How and why I love to dance. I've been taking dance lessons since I was 4. Ballet, tap, jazz. Not because I want to be a prima ballerina when I grow up, but because I intend on becoming a Broadway star someday. To do that, you really have to learn how to sing and dance and perform, which is why I work so hard on my dance lessons and my singing lessons. I take them very seriously because I know that someday, when I get my big break, I'll be ready for it. And why will I be ready for it? Because I've worked hard for it my whole life. People seem to think that Broadway stars just come out of nowhere, but that's not true. They practice until their feet hurt. They rehearse like maniacs. If you want to be a star, you have to be willing to work harder than everyone else to achieve your goals and dreams. The way I see it, a dream is like a drawing in your head that comes to life. You have to imagine it first. Then you have to work extremely hard to make it come true. So, when Savannah says, Charlotte's always the first to sign in, on one hand, it's kind of a compliment because she's saying, Charlotte's always on top of things, which is why her hard work pays off for her. But when she says, Charlotte's always the first to sign in, with that ew expression on her face, it's more like she's saying, Charlotte only gets what she wants because she's first in line. Or at least that's what I hear. A put-down. Savannah's really good at those kinds of put-downs, where it's all in the eyes and the corners of the mouth. It's too bad, because she didn't used to be like that. In lower school, Savannah and Ellie and me and Maya and Summer, we were all friends. We played together after school. We had tea parties. It's only been since we started middle school, ever since she got popular, that Savannah's become less nice than she used to be. How Mrs. Antonabi introduced her dance. Okay, ladies, said Mrs. Antonabi, clapping her hands and motioning for us to walk toward her. Everybody on the dance floor, please. Take your positions. Everybody spread out. So what we're going to do today is, I'm going to show you a couple of different dances from the 60s that I'd like you to try. The twist, the hully gully, and the mumbo. Just those three. Sound good? I had taken up a position behind Summer, who smiled and waved one of her cute, happy hellos at me. When I was little and still into flower fairies, I used to think that Summer Dawson looked exactly like the Lavender Fairy, like she should have been born with violet wings. Since when have you been into dance? I asked her, because she had never been one of the girls I'd see at dance recitals. Summer shrugged shyly. I started taking classes this summer. Sweet, I answered, smiling encouragingly. Mrs. Antonabi, said Jimena, raising her hand. What is this audition even for? Oh, my goodness, answered Mrs. Antonabi, tapping her forehead with her fingers. Of course, I completely forgot to tell you guys what we're doing here. I, personally, have always loved Mrs. Antonabi, with her long, flowy dresses and scarves and the messy bun. I love that she always has the breathless appearance of someone who's just come back from a great journey. I like that. But a lot of people think she's flaky and weird. The way she throws her head back when she laughs, the way she mumbles to herself sometimes. People have said she looks exactly like Mrs. Puff in SpongeBob SquarePants. They call her Mrs. Fatnobby behind her back, which I think is incredibly mean. I've been asked to put together a dance piece to perform at the Beecher Prep Benefit Gala, she started explaining, which is in mid-March. It's not a performance that other students will ever see. It's for the parents, faculty, and alumni, but it's kind of a big deal. They're having it at Carnegie Hall this year. Everyone made little excited chirpy sounds. Mrs. Antonabi laughed. I thought you'd all like that, she said. I'm adapting a piece I choreographed years ago, which had gotten considerable attention at the time, I don't mind saying. And it should be a lot of fun. But it will take plenty of work. Which reminds me, if you're chosen for this dance, it will require a big time commitment. I want to be clear about that right from the start, ladies. 90 minutes of rehearsal after school 3 times a week, from now through March. So if you can't commit to that, don't even try out, okay? But what if we have soccer practice? Asked Ruby, in the middle of a plié. Ladies, sometimes in life you have to choose, Mrs. Antonabi answered. You can't have soccer practice and be in this dance. It's as simple as that. I don't want to hear any excuses about homework assignments or tests or anything else. Even one missed rehearsal is too much. Remember, this is not something you're required to do for school. You don't have to be here, girls. You won't be getting extra credit. If the appeal of dancing on one of the world's most famous stages isn't enough for you, then please don't try out. She extended her arm all the way and pointed to the exit. I won't take it personally. We all looked at each other. Ruby and Jacqueline both smiled apologetically at Mrs. Antonabi, waved goodbye, and left. I couldn't believe anyone would do that. To give up the chance to dance at Carnegie Hall? That's as famous as Broadway. Mrs. Antonabi blinked, but didn't say anything. Then she rubbed her head like she was warding off a headache. One last thing, she said. If you're not selected for this particular routine, please remember there's still the big dance number in the spring variety show, and everyone can dance in that one. So if you don't make this performance, please don't have your mom email me. There are only spots for 3 girls. Only 3? Cried Ellie, covering her mouth with her hand. Yes, only 3, Mrs. Antonabi responded, sounding exactly like Mrs. Puff sounds when she says, "Oh, SpongeBob." I knew what Ellie was thinking. Please let it be me, Mena, and Savannah. But even as she wished that, she probably knew it wasn't going to work out that way. The thing is, everybody knows that Jimena is the best dancer in the whole school. She got selected for the summer intensives at the School of American Ballet. She's at that level. So it was a pretty safe bet that Jimena would make it in. And everybody knows that Savannah made the finals in 2 different regionals last year and had come close to placing at a national. So there was a good chance that she would make it in. And everybody knows that, well, not to brag, but dance is kind of my thing, and I have a bunch of huge trophies on my shelf that prove it. Ellie, though? Sorry, but she's just not in the same league as either Jimena or Savannah. Or me. Sure, she's been into dance all these years, but she's always been kind of lazy about it. I don't know, maybe if there were room for 4 girls. But not if there can only be 3. Nope. It seemed pretty clear as I looked around the room at the competition. The final 3 would be Jimena, Savannah, and me. Sorry, Ellie. And maybe, just maybe, this would be my chance to finally work my way into the Savannah group, once and for all. I could go back to having Ellie as my best friend. Savannah could have Jimena. It could all work out. The twist, the hully-gully, and the mumbo. Got it. How to Use Venn Diagrams, Part 2. In middle school, your lunch table group isn't always the same as your friend group. Like, it's very possible, in fact, it's probable, that you may end up sitting at a lunch table with a bunch of girls that you're friends with, but who aren't necessarily your friend friends. How you ended up at that table is completely random. Maybe there wasn't enough room at the table with the girls you really wanted to sit with. Or maybe you just happened to end up with a group of girls because of the class you had right before lunch. That's actually what happened to me. On the first day of school, Maya, Megan, Lena, Rand, Summer, Ellie, and I were all in Miss Potosa's advanced math class together. When the lunch bell rang, we flew down the stairs in a big huddle, not knowing exactly how to get to the cafeteria. When we finally did find it, we all just sat down at a table in a pack. It was like we were playing musical chairs, with everyone scrambling to get a seat. There were actually only supposed to be 6 kids to a table, but the 7 of us squeezed in and made it work. At first, I thought it was the greatest table in the whole lunchroom. I was sitting right between Ellie, my best friend from first grade, and Maya, my other best friend from lower school. I was sitting directly across from Summer and Megan, both of whom I knew from lower school, too, even if we weren't necessarily good friends. And I knew Lena from the Beecher Prep summer camp program. The only person I didn't know at all was Rand, but she seemed nice enough. So all in all, it looked like a totally awesome lunch table. But then, that very first day, Summer switched tables to go sit with Augie Pullman. It was so shocking. One second, we were all sitting there, talking about him, watching him eat his lunch. Lena said something really mean that I won't repeat. And the next second, Summer, without saying anything to anyone, just picked up her lunch tray and walked over to him. It was so unexpected. Lena, I remember, looked like she was watching a car accident. "Stop staring," I said to her. "I can't believe she's eating with him," she whispered, horrified. "It's not that big a deal," I said, rolling my eyes. "And why aren't you having lunch with him?" she answered. "Aren't you supposed to be his welcome buddy?" "That doesn't mean I have to sit with him at lunch," I answered quickly, regretting that I'd told anyone that Mr. Tushman had chosen me to be Augie's welcome buddy. Yes, it was an honor that he had asked me, along with Julian and Jack, but I didn't want anyone throwing it in my face. All around the cafeteria, people were doing the exact same thing we were doing at our lunch table, staring at Augie and Summer eating together. We were literally only a few hours into middle school, but people had already started calling him the zombie kid and freak. Beauty and the freak. That's what people were whispering about Summer and Augie. No way was I going to have people whisper stuff behind my back, too. "Besides," I said to Lena, taking a bite of my Caesar salad, "I like this table. I don't want to switch." And that was true. I did like this table. At least, at first I did. But then, as I got to know everyone a little better, I realized that maybe I didn't have as much in common with them as I would have liked. It turned out that Lena, Megan, and Rand were all super into sports. Maya played soccer, but that was all. So there was this whole world of soccer games and swim meets and away games that Ellie and I couldn't really talk to them about. Another thing is that they had all chosen to be in orchestra, while Ellie and I had chosen chorus. And the last thing, very simply, was that they weren't into a lot of the stuff we were into. They never watched The Voice or American Idol. They weren't into movie stars or old movies. They had never even seen Les Miserables, for crying out loud. I mean, how could I have a serious friendship with someone who had no interest in seeing Les Mis? But as long as I had Ellie to talk to, with Maya there to round us out, everything was totally fine by me. The three of us would chat about the stuff we wanted to talk about on our side of the table, and Megan, Lena, and Rand would chat about the stuff they wanted to talk about on their side of the table. And then we'd all catch up about the stuff we had in common. Schoolwork, homework, teachers, tests, bad cafeteria food, in the middle of the table. Which is why everything was good, until Ellie switched tables. And now it's just me, and Maya. Maya, who was only really fun to talk to when Ellie was there. Or if you wanted to play a rousing game of dots. Look, I'm not mad at Ellie for switching tables. I honestly don't blame her. Ever since we heard that Amos had a crush on her, it was like she'd gotten a free pass into the popular group. Savannah had asked her to sit with them at lunch, and then arranged it so Amos and Ellie sat next to each other. That's how all the couples in the grade got together. Jimena and Miles, Savannah and Henry, and now Amos and Ellie, in arranged group huddles, the popular boys and the popular girls. It was natural that they'd all want to stick together. Nobody else in our grade is dating, or even close to dating. I know for a fact that the girls at my lunch table still act like boys have cooties. And from what I can tell, Most of the boys act like girls don't exist. So, yeah, I totally get why Ellie switched lunch tables. I really do. And I'm not about to be super mad at her, like Maya is. It's hard when you've been invited to a better lunch table. There's kind of no looking back. All I can do is sit and wait, talk to Maya, and hope that Savannah will ask me to join them at the popular table someday. In the meanwhile, I draw Venn diagrams and play lots and lots of dots. How a new subgroup was formed. The next day, right before lunch, this note was tacked to the announcement board outside of the library. Congratulations to the girls listed below. You've been chosen to participate in Mrs. Antonabi's 1960s dance performance. I've posted a rehearsal schedule on the website. Mark your calendars. No absences, no excuses. Our first rehearsal is tomorrow at 4 p.m. in the performance space. Do not dare to be late, Mrs. Antonabi. Amina Chin, Charlotte Cody, Summer Dawson. OMG, I got in! Yay! I was so happy when I read my name on the list. Overjoyed, ecstatic, woohoo! So it was me, Amina, and Summer? What? Summer? That was such a surprise. I was so positively sure it was going to be Savannah. I mean, Summer had just started taking dance. Did she really beat out Savannah? Oh, boy. I could only imagine how mad Savannah was at that. I bet her ew frown stretched clear across her face when she saw the list. And Ellie? Actually, I bet Ellie was somewhat relieved. She would have had a hard time keeping up with Jimena and Savannah, and Ellie never really loved dancing that much. I always kind of thought she was only into it because I'd always been into it. I was happy it worked out for her this way. I mean, she might not act like it, but she's still my BFF. And I was happy for me, too, because even though I was hoping to get a bit closer to the Savannah group, I had also been a little stressed, wondering if the Savannah and Jimena pairing would have iced me out. But having Summer in the group along with Jimena? That was going to be awesome! Maybe the combined power of Summer's niceness and my niceness would turn Jimena into one of us. At the very least, it might keep her from being the mean girl everyone seems to think she is. Not that I think she's a mean girl. In fact, I barely know her. Either way, having Summer be the third girl in the dance made me so happy, I almost couldn't stop smiling all day. How I saw Savannah. At lunch, I squeezed in next to Maya and Rand, who were hunched over yet another one of Maya's giant dot games, which were getting more and more elaborate. So, I said happily, good news, guys. I got picked to be in Mrs. Antonabi's 60s dance show for the benefit in March. Yay! Yay, Maya answered, not looking up from the dot game. That's great, Charlotte. Yay, echoed Rand. Congrats. Summer got in, too. Oh, yay. Good for her, said Maya. I like Summer. She's always so nice. Rand, who was marking a row of boxes she had just closed off with her initial, looked up at Maya and smiled. 15, she said. Ugh, said Maya, grinding her teeth. She had just gotten braces and was making a lot of funny movements with her mouth these days. I flicked my eraser at them. That sure is one intense game of dots you're playing there, I said sarcastically. Ha ha, said Maya, leaning into me with her shoulder. That's so funny, I forgot to laugh. The mean girl table is looking at you, said Rand. What? I said. Both Maya and I turned around in the direction she was staring. But Savannah, Jimena, Gretchen, and Ellie turned away the moment I glanced in their direction. They were so just talking about you, said Maya, giving them her dirtiest look through her black-framed glasses. Stop that, Maya, I said to her. Why? I don't care, she answered. Let them see me. She bared her teeth at them like some kind of crazy ferret. Stop looking at them, Maya, I whispered, through my own gritted teeth. "Fine," she said. She went back to playing her colossal game of dots with Rand, and I concentrated on eating my ravioli. At one point, I could feel someone's eyes burning into my back, so I turned around to sneak a peek at the Savannah table again. This time around, Jimena, Gretchen, and Ellie were talking together, completely oblivious to me. But Savannah was glaring right at me, and she didn't look away when our eyes met. She just continued staring me down. Then, right before she finally stopped, she poked her tongue out at me. It happened so fast, no one else would have seen it, and it seemed so childish, I almost couldn't believe it. That's when I realized that I had got it wrong before, about Summer taking the third spot in Mrs. Antonobby's dance piece. I had thought that spot should have gone to Savannah, not Summer. But in Savannah's view, it wasn't Summer who had taken that spot from her. It was me. "Charlotte's always the first to sign in," she had said. Savannah blamed me for taking her rightful spot in the dance. How we got off to an awkward start. All the next day, the threat of a snowstorm made everyone kind of giddy and uncertain, since there was talk that the school would close early if it came down as bad as the forecast predicted. Luckily, because the last thing in the world I wanted was for our first rehearsal to be canceled, the snow only started falling in the late afternoon, not hard at all. So I made my way up to the performance space as quickly as I could after the last bell. Given that Mrs. Antonobby had issued such a threatening warning about being late, I wasn't surprised that both Summer and Jimena were already there, too. We said hello to one another before changing into our dance clothes. It was a little awkward at first, I guess. The three of us had never really hung out together before. We were from different groups, our own version of mammals, reptiles, and fish. Summer and I only had one class together. And like I said before, I barely knew Jimena. The longest conversation we'd ever had was back in December, in Ms. Rubin's class, when she asked me, without a shred of remorse, if I would mind switching partners with her so she could be paired up with Savannah. Which is how I ended up with Remo as my science fair project partner. But that's a whole other story not worth telling. We started doing warm-ups and stretches to pass the time. Mrs. Antonobby was now almost half an hour late. "Do you think this is how it's always going to be?" said Jimena, mid-bump-ma. "Mrs. Antonobby being late?" "She's never on time to theater class," I said, shaking my head. "Right," Jimena said. "That's what I'm afraid of." "Maybe she just got stuck in the snow?" Summer said, somewhat hopefully. "It's starting to come down pretty hard now, I think." Jimena made a face. "Yeah, maybe she needs a dog sled," she answered quickly. "Ha ha ha," I laughed, but I could tell I sounded dorky. Please, God, please don't let me seem dorky in front of Jimena Chin. The truth is, Jimena Chin made me a little nervous. I don't know why exactly. It was just that she was so cool and so pretty, and everything about her was always so perfect. The way she wrapped her scarf, the way her jeans fit her, the way she fastened her hair into the neatest twist. Everything was so flawless with her. I remember from the moment Jimena started at Beecher Prep this year, everybody had wanted to be her friend, including me. I'm sure she didn't even remember this, but I was the one who helped her find her locker on the first day of school. I was the one who let her borrow a pencil in third period, which she never returned to me, come to think of it. But Savannah was the one who became her best friend. Savannah managed to zoom in on her within the first nanosecond of school. And then, forget it. It was like the big bang of friendships. It just exploded into an instantaneous universe of knowing looks and giggles and clothes and secrets. There was really no chance of getting to know Jimena better after that. The truth is, she didn't make much of an effort to expand beyond the Savannah group anyway. Maybe she felt like she didn't actually have to. People said she was kind of a snob. All I really knew about her was that she had the most amazing leg extension I'd ever seen, the highest scores in our grade, and she was snarky. Meaning, She made a lot of clever observations about people behind their backs. There were a bunch of people, like Maya, for instance, who couldn't stand her. But I couldn't wait to get to know her better. To be friends with her, maybe. To laugh at her sarcastic jibes. More than anything, though, I just really, really, really wanted her to like me. I hope this is all going to be worth the time suck, Jimena was saying. I mean, we've got so many other things going on this month. That science fair project? I haven't even started mine, said Summer. Me neither, I said, though that actually wasn't true at all. Remo and I had finished our diorama of a cell the first week back from winter break. I just want to make sure we get enough rehearsal time for this dance, Jimena said, looking at her phone. I don't want to be on stage at Carnegie Hall looking like a total idiot because we didn't rehearse enough, all because Mrs. Antonabi was too flaky to show up on time. You know, I said, trying to sound casual, if we ever need a place to rehearse away from school, you guys could come over to my house. I have a mirrored wall in my basement and a bar. My mom used to teach ballet out of our house. I remember your basement, said Summer cheerfully. You had that flower fairy birthday party there once. Back in the second grade, I answered, a little embarrassed she would mention flower fairies in front of Jimena. Do you live far from here? Jimena asked me, scrolling through her texts. Just 10 blocks away. Okay, text me your address, she said. Sure, I said, whipping out my phone, thinking, I'm texting Jimena Chin my address, like the big dork that I am. Sorry, what's your number? She didn't look up from her phone, but held her hand up to my face like a crossing guard. There, running vertically down the side of her palm, was her phone number, written in neat block letters in dark blue pen. I keyed her number into my contacts and texted her my address. Hey, you know, I said as I was texting, you guys could come over tomorrow after school if you want. We can start rehearsing then. Okay, Jimena mumbled casually, which made me want to gasp. Jimena Chin is coming over to my house tomorrow. Oh, I actually can't, said Summer, squinting her eyes apologetically. I'm hanging out with Augie tomorrow. What about Friday, then? I asked. Can't, said Jimena. She had obviously finished texting now and looked up. Then maybe next week? I said. We'll figure out some other time, Jimena answered indifferently. She started running her fingers through her hair. I forget you're friends with the freak, she said to Summer, smiling. What's that like? I don't think she was even trying to be mean when she said this. That's really just how a lot of people automatically referred to Augie Pullman. I looked at Summer. Don't say anything, I thought. But I knew she would. How nobody gets mad at the Lavender Fairy. Summer sighed. Could you please not call him that? She asked, almost shyly. Jimena acted like she didn't get it. Why? He's not here, she said, pulling her hair into a ponytail. It's just a nickname. It's an awful nickname, Summer answered. It makes me feel bad. Here's the thing with Summer Dawson. She has this way of talking where she can say stuff like this, and people don't seem to mind. If I had said something like this, forget it. People would be all over me about being a goody-two-shoes. But when the Lavender Fairy does it, with her cute little eyebrows raised like smiles on her forehead, she doesn't come off as preachy. She just seems sweet. Oh, okay, I'm sorry, answered Jimena apologetically, her eyes open wide. I honestly wasn't trying to be mean, Summer, but I won't call him that again, I promise. She sounded like she was genuinely sorry, but there was something about her expression that always made you wonder if she was being completely sincere. I think it had something to do with the dimple in her left cheek. She almost couldn't help looking mischievous. Summer looked at her doubtfully. It's fine. I really am sorry, said Jimena, almost like she was trying to smooth out her dimple. Now Summer smiled. Totally cool beans, she said. I've said it before and I'll say it again, answered Jimena, giving Summer a little squeeze. You really are a saint, Summer. For a second, I felt a quick pang of jealousy that Ximena seemed to like Summer so much. I don't think anyone should call him a freak either, I said absently. Now, here I have to stop and say something in my defense. I have no idea why I said that. It literally just came out of me, this stupid string of words hurling from my mouth like vomit. I knew immediately how obnoxious it made me sound.
So you've never called him that, Ximena said, raising one eyebrow high.
The way she was looking at me, it was like she was daring me to blink. I said. I could feel my ears turning red. No, I'm sorry I said it. Don't hate me, Ximena-chan.
Let me ask you something, she said quickly. Would you go out with him?
It was so out of the blue, I almost didn't know what to say.
What? No, I answered immediately. Exactly, she said, like she had just proved a point. But not because of how he looks, I said, flustered. Just because we don't have anything in common.
Oh, come on, laughed Ximena. That's so not true. I didn't know what she was getting at.
Would you go out with him? I asked.
Of course not, she answered calmly, but I'm not about to be hypocritical about it. I glanced at Summer, who gave me an ouch, that hurts look.
Hey, I don't want to be mean, continued Ximena matter-of-factly, but when you say, oh, I would never call him a freak, it totally makes me look like a jerk because I had obviously just called him that. And it's kind of annoying because everyone knows that Mr. Tushman asked you to be his welcome buddy, and that's why you don't call him a freak like everybody else does. Summer became friends with him without anyone forcing her to be his welcome buddy, which is why she's a saint.
I'm not a saint, Summer answered quickly, and I don't think Charlotte would have called him that, even if Mr. Tushman hadn't asked her to be a welcome buddy.
See, you're being a saint even now, said Ximena.
I don't think I would have called him a freak, I said quietly.
Ximena crossed her arms. She was looking at me with a knowing smile. You know, you're nicer to him when you're in front of teachers, she said very seriously. It's been noticed.
Before I could answer, not that I even knew what I would have answered, Mrs. Antonabi burst into the performance space through the double doors in the back of the auditorium.
So sorry I'm late, so sorry I'm late, she announced breathlessly, covered in snow.
She looked like a little snowman as she walked down the stairs, carrying four ridiculously full tote bags. Ximena and Summer ran up the stairs to help her, but I turned around and walked out to the hallway. I pretended to drink at the water fountain, but what I really needed to gulp down was air. Ice-cold air. Because I could feel my cheeks burning, like they were on fire. It felt like I'd just gotten slapped in the face. I could see out the hallway window that the snow really was coming down hard now, and a part of me just wanted to run outside and ice skate away. Is that how other people saw me? Like I was this hypocritical fake or something? Or was that just Ximena being her typical snarky self?
You're nicer to him when you're in front of teachers. It's been noticed.
Is that true? Has it been noticed? I mean, have there been a couple of times when I was being especially nice to Augie Pullman because I knew it would get back to Mr. Tushman that I was being a good welcome buddy? Maybe. I don't know. But even if that were the case, at least I can say I've been nice to him. That's more than most people can say. That's more than Ximena can say. I still remember that time she was partnered with Augie in dance class and looked like she was about to throw up. I've never done anything like that to Augie. Okay, so maybe I am a little nicer to Augie when teachers are around. Is that so horrible? It's been noticed? What does that even mean? Noticed by who? Savannah? Ellie? Is that what they say about me? Is that what they were talking about in the lunchroom yesterday when they were so obviously talking about me that even Maya, who can be so clueless about social stuff, felt sorry for me? Here this whole time I had assumed that Ximena-chan didn't even know who I was, and now it turns out I've been noticed more than I ever wanted to be.
how I received my first surprise of the day. I walked back inside the performance space as Mrs. Antonabi finished unwrapping herself from all her wintry layers. Her coat, her scarf, and her sweater were all scattered around her on the floor, which was wet from the snow she had brought inside with her. "Oh my gosh, oh my gosh," she kept saying over and over again, fanning herself with both hands. "It's really starting to come down now." She plopped onto the piano bench in front of the stage and caught her breath. "Oh my gosh, I do hate being late." I saw Jimena and Summer exchange knowing looks. "When I was little," Mrs. Antonabi continued, talking in that chatterbox way of hers that some people loved and some people thought made her seem crazy, "my mother actually used to charge my sister and me $1 every time we were late for something. Literally every time I was late, even if it was just for dinner, I had to pay my mom $1. She laughed and started redoing her bun, holding a couple of bobby pins in her teeth while she talked. "When your entire allowance for the week is only $3, you learn to budget your time. That's why I'm conditioned to hate being late." "And yet," Jimena pointed out, smiling in that sly way of hers, "you are still late today. Maybe we should charge you $1 from now on." "Ha ha ha," laughed Mrs. Antonabi, good-naturedly, flicking off her boots. "Yes, I was late, Jimena. And that's actually not a bad idea. Maybe I should give all three of you $1. Jimena kind of laughed, assuming she was joking. "In fact," Mrs. Antonabi said, reaching for her pocketbook, "I think I'm going to give each one of you girls $1 bill every time I'm late to a rehearsal. From now on, that'll force me to be on time." Summer shot me a quizzical look. We started to realize that Mrs. Antonabi, who had pulled out her wallet, was serious. "Oh, no, Mrs. Antonabi," said Summer, shaking her head. "You don't have to do that." "I know, but I'm going to," answered Mrs. Antonabi, smiling. "Now, here's the rub. I'll agree to give each of you $1 every time I'm late to a rehearsal, if you agree to give me $1 every time you're late for a rehearsal." "Are you allowed to do that?" Jimena asked incredulously. "Take money from a student?" I was thinking the same thing. "Why not?" answered Mrs. Antonabi. "You're in private school. You can afford it." "Probably more than I can," this last part she muttered, and then she started cracking up. Mrs. Antonabi was kind of famous for laughing at her own jokes. You pretty much had to get used to it. She pulled 3 crisp dollar bills out of her wallet and held them up in the air for us to see. "So, what do you girls say?" she said. "Is it a deal?" Jimena looked at both of us. "I know I'm never going to be late," she said to us. "I'm not going to be late either," said Summer. I shrugged, still unable to look Jimena in the eyes. "Me neither," I said. "Then it's a deal," said Mrs. Antonabi, walking over to us. "For you, mademoiselle," she said to Jimena, handing her a spanking new dollar bill. "Merci," said Jimena, shooting us a quick smile, which I pretended not to see. Then Mrs. Antonabi walked over to me and Summer. "For you and for you," she said, handing us each a dollar bill. "God bless America," we both answered at the same time. "Wait, what?" We looked at each other, our mouths and eyes open wide. Suddenly, everything that occurred in the last half hour seemed to lose any importance, if what I think just happened did just happen. "The accordion man?" I whispered excitedly. Summer gasped and nodded happily. "The accordion man!" How We Went to Narnia. It's funny how you can know someone your whole life, but not really know them at all. Here, this whole time, I've been living in a parallel world to Summer Dawson, a nice girl I've known since kindergarten, who I've always thought looked like the Lavender Fairy. But we'd never actually become friends. Not for any particular reason. It just worked out that way. The same way that Ellie and I were destined to be friends because Miss Diamond had sat us next to each other on the first day of school, Summer and I were destined not to get to know each other because we were never in the same classes, except for PE and swim, and assembly and concerts and stuff like that. Our paths never crossed in lower school. Our moms weren't really friends, so we never had playdates.